So JP, I see this scenario as really having two questions. One is practical, about getting into the airport right now or in the near future. And the other is more ADM, because you're going to have to get back out. So let's start with the specific and a very specific question. The standard advice is not to use onboard Nexrad data link weather for tactical avoidance. Yet it seems like that's exactly what you're doing right here. Why is that okay?
It's not okay. You have to keep in mind, as we mentioned, we're talking 5 to 10 minute radar delays in the data, not because it's a bad tool, just because of the radar, how it scans and the transmission from the radar and going through all of those conduits to get to your airplane. The other tools, aside from that, ADS-B weather is being able to listen to other aircraft on frequency, listen to the controllers, and paint a picture. What we do know from this is that you do have precipitation that is setting up right there along the final approach course. Sure, airplanes have been getting in, but how do I know? And that goes back to my ADS-B radar. What I'm looking at is essentially historical, 5 to 10 minutes back in history. How do I know that it hasn't intensified? Could I be going into something 5 to 10 minutes ago looked pretty good, and now it's starting to blossom on me? So while I am using that ADS-B weather data as a tool, I'm also reminding myself it is old, and I could be looking at something that's starting to be really in the infancy of its development.
So if I can paraphrase what you're saying there, it is not okay to use Datalink Nexrad for tactical avoidance as the only tool, but it is okay to use Datalink Radar as part of a suite of tools to create a tactical strategy, a tactical picture
that's
that
right.
You're going to operate off of.
That's right. It's one of several pieces to put together that puzzle so you can paint in what is going on in that area. So it's really a critical tool.
Well, let me stick on that word and stay with you for a second on paint, because I'm looking at your choice of the RNAV approach to the north of the airport with a cell on one side of you, weather on the other side of you, and stuff coming up from below. Aren't you painting yourself into a box here that you've got a great place to wait right now, right? But all the weather is moving through and probably going to walk through that spot. Or haven't you put yourself in a place where you may not really have a good out compared to some of these other options?
Certainly the option that the escape route going back home to Atlanta, that's still going to be in existence for a good bit of time. There's not a whole lot going on to the east. To the north, you're in pretty good shape. You do have the precip. It's mainly what we're seeing is light to moderate precip south of the airport. This is a tropical system, and my background, you know, may be a little bit different than other pilots, being a meteorologist, that generally these tropical systems, you're looking at bands of rain, could be a little bit turbulent there. What you're trying to stay out of is anything that has the appearance of a thunderstorm developing. A lot of the tropical weather will not have that, but you can get, during the afternoon, this is early afternoon, you can get some of those cells that start developing, getting vertically developed. You can even get tornadoes as a result of that. So what I'm trying to do is get to the north of this and then hook my way into the airport. Geographically, I'm not too far from the airport right now, and this just gets me out of the position where I'm not going to be flying through that storm that's on the final approach course. I go to the north and I come on in, and within probably, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, somewhere in that time frame, I'm safely on the ground with still the possibility of escaping off to the east if necessary.
You know, there was lots of good information in there, and I heard the word tornadoes,
yeah.
And suddenly I just was like, man, I don't know. Now, Catherine, I was with you. If I had been posed the question, I want those delay vectors and I want to stay well north or well east with a foot towards the escape, that's just my take on it. Is that where you're coming from, or was it a different factor about two that appealed to you?
Well, yeah, a couple of things. That was my main reason for choosing two. You've got an escape to the east. I like the idea of you know, you can see the trends. So this may be historical, but you can at least go back and see the trends for these cells. And based on the picture here, it seems to me that they're moving to the north. So I like the idea of staying to the east until I can get a vector onto the final approach course for the 2-4 approach. The only reason I think that the approach to 1-8 might have an advantage is that you're looking at much more of a headwind there. I'm looking at a pretty good crosswind landing on 2-4, but the minimums for the 2-4 approach are a good bit lower. So I think the one that gave me pause on the approach to 1-8 is just, you know, you may or may not break out on that approach. So for those reasons, I really like the idea of staying to the east. And if things just, if the picture gets worse, I can just dart back toward Atlanta.
Dart back toward Atlanta. Mark, you are out of here. Why?
Well, I never left Atlanta to begin with. You know, and I think, you know, and I keep on anticipating the next scenario, which is called getting out of Birmingham. You know, and I think, and that's kind of where I am on this scenario. The only reason that I'm even in this situation is a desire to pick up this passenger and let her see her son. That's it. That's the only reason I'm there. And other than that, I would never have been making that flight to begin with. And I think the closer I get to Birmingham, when I start thinking about, well, you know, if I get vectors here and I get in or I take this approach, all I'm doing is increasing my desire to complete this mission and makes the turning around less and less likely.
Dave.
You know, I'm a lot less concerned about getting in to Birmingham than I am what's going to happen on the ground at Birmingham and then the eventual return to Atlanta. You know, personally, it's like other airplanes are getting in. You made the point about the tactical use of the composite radar picture. It's 1:30 in the afternoon. I think of Delta 191 situation, the microburst in Dallas. That's a evening event with a dissipating thunderstorm. And here it doesn't look like it's even in the mature phase. So I'm really not concerned about following the other airplanes into runway 24, making a normal approach and landing. However, I'm still responsible for protecting that airplane when it's on the ground. And, you know, with the possibility of a big cell moving right over the airport, and then, you know, the thunderstorm situation getting worse and maybe preventing the return to Atlanta. You know, those things are very prominent in my mind while I'm considering what to do here. You know, I think getting in will be relatively easy. Getting out may be more problematic, and I'm going to make the decision as to whether to land or return based on the information about just the current state. And a lot of people were talking about waiting and delay vectors, and I certainly see the logic behind that, but it just seems like the longer you stay, the worse these afternoon storms are likely to be.
So for clarity here, your choice is really a 1/4. You've been issued a vector, so you're going to take option one, you're going to get on the ILS 24, you're going to land. Right.
Right. If I am convinced that it's like, okay, this is a safe and reasonable thing to do is to land, then I can certainly continue with that. However, you know, I've also got to satisfy myself that I'm not going to get hail damage on the ground at the destination and still be able to return.
I'm not going to let you off the hook here until I can parse this out. You've been given the vector. It's now or never. What are you going to do? Are you convinced, I guess, is what I'm saying. You said you're going to make the decision. It's decision time.
Yeah, I'm convinced I can make it a safe landing. But if all I've got to go on is the picture right this moment, mm-hmm. then, you know, I'll probably decline the approach clearance and return to Atlanta.
Okay. So it's really on that line for you.
Right.
Because it's now or never making the decision, right? If you're not making a delay. John.
So I chose 4, but with the asterisk. 4 would be to turn around. Mm-hmm. But I might be inclined to go to, there's a couple of good airports out to the east that are clear. It's Talladega, Anniston, a couple of places there. I might land there, wait it out, call the mom again, say, you know, give us an hour or so and let's see how this goes. I'd like to be able to make it happen. But for all the reasons that everyone else has said, I'm concerned about getting stuck on the ground at Birmingham. There's just a lot of uncertainty there. But the other piece of it is, I've done a lot of angel flights. I've been doing it for almost 15 years. And all the patient care organizations are adamant about not taking risks with patients. You know, we're not delivering the serum here. We're not rushing the baby off to the hospital. There's none of these that are life critical. So I'd be inclined to go wait it out, see what I could do, and maybe just give her apologies.
Yeah, apologies or pay for an Uber maybe for that short distance to get just little bit further over.
Maybe there's a possibility that she could work something out. But it'd be a whole lot easier to do that on the ground. And you're only, you know, the whole trip is a little over 100 miles. So if you're 30 miles east, you're out of this.
You know, clearly there's an important split here between the going in and the going out. Doug, you said you are taking the vector and you're going to fly the approach, but maybe with a caveat on that. So let's focus on the landing part. Why are you willing to go through what might be a developing cell?
Okay, the reason I'm willing to go through the developing cell is what I'm looking at is ADS-B radar. I can show you numerous photos that I've taken in airplanes where I have ADS-B and I have XM. And my airplane in the ADS-B is in red, and in the XM, I'm in yellow. That's part of it. The other one is that I'm talking to an approach controller, and their radar is much better than anything I'm going to have in the airplane. Okay, I don't really see any major risk in flying this approach with the information that is there, along with the fact that I do, at least I'd like to hope and think, that ATC has my back.
You are nodding there, JP.
Yeah, there is he's got a good point between ADS-B and the XM. Both are, it's good data because it's something that we didn't have in the cockpit before, but the resolution is going to be better on the Sirius XM weather data. And what you're going to see with that data, especially on the ADS-B, is it tends to amplify things. I kind of joke about it, calling it blobo vision. It gives you an idea there, but it tends to make it look a little worse than it is. And that's just because of the capabilities of what you're doing with the data and bandwidth and all of that. So that is an excellent point. You know, going back into this, in terms of this being a tropical system that's already made landfall and it's miles away, based on what you're seeing on radar here, I think continuing in on 2-4 would likely work, especially if you're using the resources of the air traffic control radar. And I also think the 1-8 would likely work too. My choice with going 1-8 was I'm just going to get out of all of this and head to the north and go that route. But 2-4, if you really don't get too caught up in the ADS-B data and you make sure from that controller, okay, what are you seeing here on the final approach course? I don't think that's a bad option.
John?
No, I was just going to make a comment about Doug's willing to fly through this. This is from a guy who flies an airplane with no paint on the leading edges.
On the leading edges, there's no paint on the airplane anywhere. But there is that factor of the controller is not really seeing anything. And we do have another airplane that just flew through this and was looking laterally through it. You know, it makes me think, how comfortable are you taking the controller's guidance over what you're seeing? We're walking further and further into a world where we have a lot of data. Back when I started to fly through the clouds, you know, all you have was the controller, or boy, it's kind of getting dark in here. I guess I better tighten my seatbelt kind of thing. So, Doug, I mean, you're out there as much as anybody and taking the paint off your airplane. When there's a discrepancy between those two, how do you resolve it?
Again, it depends who I'm talking to, okay? If I'm talking to a TRACON, it's one thing. If I'm talking to Center, what they have is maybe not even as good as what I have. Mm-hmm. So that is a major part of it. I've certainly had situations in talking with TRACONs, and I'm looking at what I have and put in a request for some kind of a deviation, and they say, well, you know, I'd suggest this, and I'll flip the coin and take their suggestion, and it works out. I've had other times actually where they've suggested something and I insisted on what I was requesting and my request worked out and had I taken their suggestion. So some of this is a coin toss. I'll be very honest. It's a coin toss. And for me, you know, as you say, I've been out there a lot and a lot of it's my gut.
Well, and it's one of these things where it's great until it isn't, right? Like if you keep flipping the coin and you keep getting the one that works out, you're going to build up a history along those lines.
I don't deny it. I don't deny it.
JP.
Yeah, and I had a similar situation happen to what we're talking about in this scenario. I was coming back from Florida and coming back into Birmingham, and I knew there's going to be a lot of weather. It wasn't a tropical system, but it was really a line of thunderstorms that was basically going to be moving across the field. I'm going to try to get there before they arrive. So I'm talking finally... I get the handoff to a Birmingham approach, and I've been deviating all over the place to try to dodge this. In Birmingham approach, they said, you better hurry it up. It's getting close to the field. And I said, I'm pedaling as fast as I can. So I'm coming back to the airport, and I almost make it. And I can see right there, I'm actually VMC. This line of storms coming across, I'm like, oh my gosh. And one of the corporate jets was coming in. Winds were already at the field picking up to 40 knots. And all along, I had my escape plan in my head. I'm going to go to one of the adjacent airports, one of the satellite airports. So I said, I'm going to the Shelby County Airport. I told the approach controller. So I get vectors to the Shelby County Airport. And about 10 minutes later, controller comes on. That weather just passed the Birmingham airport. Do you want to turn around and come back? So I didn't make it to the Shelby County Airport. I tried it again, came in on runway 24, and I didn't even have, I mean, it was like the smoothest flight back. That's how dynamic the weather is and how it can go from terrible to not so bad.
Doug?
I certainly have had similar experiences. Yeah. In fact, trying to get into Hickory once, where I'd gone visual and was on the base leg, and saw the cell, you know, best information is two eyeballs out the window, and this ain't going to work, and turned around and went back to another airport. But the other part that I wanted to address is that when I'm flying in potentially convective weather, another piece of equipment that I want, that I do have in my airplane, and certainly some of my clients don't necessarily have it, and then I'm a little nervous about it, is either a storm scope or a strike finder, okay? I don't have live real-time radar. But in convective activity, that storm scope is very important to me just as much. In the pictures that we're seeing here, I'm assuming that there is lightning. There is the potential for lightning to be reported, which is typically cloud to ground in the ADS-B lightning that we see, whereas a storm scope could be intra-cloud, cloud to cloud, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that's another piece of very valuable information. And there's nothing that I'm seeing in the information of this scenario that says there are actually any thunderstorms. There's some heavy precipitation. There's going to be some turbulence. But I'll turn to you and say, you know, for a tornado, wouldn't we be seeing lightning?
You could, and not always.
Okay.
And I go back to a scenario... a couple of years back, we had kind of one of these days, and I'm sitting at the house. I haven't even decided to go into the TV station. Usually, I am ahead of the severe weather, and one of our other guys is on TV, and all of a sudden, within about a 15-minute time period, we've got a tornado warning. We've got a funnel that has developed. And the reason for that is not because this is necessarily this massively convective day, but anytime you have a landfalling tropical system, you have a lot of wind shear. And that wind shear starts to make those storms rotate. So sometimes you get the lightning in this particular scenario. Sometimes you don't. I think the catch on this one, it's a landfalling tropical system. If this was run-of-the-mill springtime convective weather, it would be. You would be looking at those lightning strikes. But you can have a tornado with no lightning, as crazy as that sounds.
Okay. Mark.
You mentioned the coin toss, and it works until it doesn't. And I think that's one of the ADM issues in here. Is that as I went through the scenario, I said, well, suppose I get into Birmingham successfully. Isn't that, in a sense, worse from an ADM standpoint than having turned around, because now I've seen something which looks pretty horrible and it worked out just great. And the next time it might be even worse and I'll expect it to work out just great. And I think it's really bad from an ADM standpoint.
Dave.
Yeah, just a quick anecdote is I was in one of the AOPA sweepstakes airplanes. I'm taking it cross country, stop in the Midwest, and I was out, you know, refueled, had a Snickers bar, getting ready to get back in the airplane, and I'm thinking, wow, this is really nice light. I'm going to take a few pictures of the airplane. You know, looks gorgeous in this shiny afternoon light. Look at that pretty cloud behind the airplane. and it suddenly dawns on me that this is a towering cumulus, and I was thinking, wow, I've either got to get out of here or I've got to get this airplane into shelter. And fortunately, there was a hangar available that I was able to pull the airplane in, and because within 15 minutes, you know, there was, you know, high winds, hail, this gust front that, you know, was blowing stuff all across the ramp, and it just made the obvious impression was, it's like, hey, look, you're not just responsible for protecting this airplane in the air, you've got to do it on the ground too. You know, to Mike's point about protecting it. You know, about what happens if, you know, being on the ground at the destination is worse. It's like this was one of those situations.
Oh yeah, you give a whole new meaning to flash photography all of a sudden when you, you know, with the airplane there. John.
So I want to go back to it, JP, what you were talking about on the nature of tropical storms. What we're looking at on radar is precipitation intensities. So you know, the yellows and reds, and I'm not that familiar with the southern areas with this, but often we get these tropical storms up in the northeast, the remnants of them, and there can be deluges. It's you know, the fire hose on the windshield with the heavy rain, but it's really smooth. There's no convective activity. It's this conveyor belt of moisture that's coming up the coast. And we could just talk a little bit about like some of the hazards and differences of that.
Yeah, I think the differentiation is we actually start in the south and southeast, you have more of an instability factor. So during the afternoon, it starts to heat up. So not only do you have the wind shear, but then you have the instability. Now it heats up, of course, in the northeast, but you're going to be looking at that instability being higher in the southeast. And that's why you do have that potential for the tornado and even severe storm development. Sometimes, like I said, you don't have the tornado potential. And one of the options that you mentioned, which I really liked, we didn't have it in this particular scenario, is off to the east. There's a lot of airports. The Pell City Airport is in the clear. Things are nice over there. That is probably a really nice choice. Park the airplane there and wait it out and see what happens in Birmingham. The tropical systems, by and large, are fairly smooth and fairly stratiform in terms of the rain and not necessarily the worst weather to fly in after they've made landfall and they've started in that weakening state.
You know, that option that wasn't an option that John brought up about landing close by to the east, I want to ask you, Catherine, because if we were both choice two, and I'm thinking more and more about that, I'm liking that choice even more. Is that something you would consider, or do you want to stay in the air for maneuverability here, or do you want to sit and wait it out kind of in a halfway position?
I would see how the weather is trending, and I'd still give choice two a shot. But if that didn't work out, sure, there are some close-by airports just a little bit to the east where a quick Uber ride would do the job.
Looking to Dave and to Mark, does that option of landing, but not right at the destination where the mom is waiting with packed bags ready to go, does that address to some degree the ADM issue that you're running into, Mark?
It does for me. You know, if we can set up something where we can arrange for some transportation from the Birmingham area to one of those other outlying airports further east, then that solves the problem. I think if I'm understanding the weather picture correctly, it is a southwest to northeast airflow. And if I remain to the east, I'm going to remain in the clear. And if I could just land short of Birmingham, that may solve both problems at one time.
As long as I'm convinced that I'm not going to have the ground problem that the the place that I land is going to remain clear of any sort of convective activity. I love the idea of, you know, John's an out of the box thinker. It's like he can, you know, let's not totally give up yet. There may still be a way if this stuff passes.
JP.
Yeah, I think that is a hybrid solution or a nice compromise. You meet the mission, but you don't compromise your safety or the safety of the aircraft. And you still, if you're going to go to Atlanta, you got to pass by those airports anyway. So might as well just stop at one and knock off 2 hours off the trip.
John, a question for you. How much do you think controllers respond to the pilot sort of using their weather picture to ask for things and make decisions? Does a controller become more hands-off in that? Like, well, this pilot has kind of a plan. I'm just going to count on them. Yeah, I've kind of wondered that myself when I start like jumping into the driver's seat and saying, you know, I want here, I want there. Weather control's like, all right, well, whatever he wants is fine. I wouldn't fly that way, but, you know.
It's a mix of both. I mean, you have to have a lot of confidence in your equipment, and most controllers are pretty confident, but they're also not pilots and they're not meteorologists. And what I see is actually the reverse is because all radar depicts precipitation, it doesn't depict convective activity. So you can fly through a cloud that's a building thunderstorm that's, you know, rising air like crazy, get trashed around, but it doesn't show up on either radar. And often I've seen controllers will say, there must be something wrong with my radar. This guy is reporting turbulence and I'm not seeing anything on the radar. And I would always try to explain to them that you can't see clouds, you can't see turbulence. All you're seeing is precipitation. So that gives controllers then a certain leeriness towards the accuracy of their depiction. So they're looking, you know, pilots are looking out the window, seeing that big puffy cloud that they don't want to go through. And the controller's saying, I don't see anything wrong with going through that. So there's a certain leeriness that then develops.
Doug.
I was going to Palm Beach once in the Malibu, and we're IMC, and handed off to Miami, and they wanted to turn me off to the west. Now, this was way before GPS. I had a Loran in it, actually, but I did have a storm scope. And I'm looking at the storm scope, and it's all lit up about 25 miles away. And I tell Miami, I said, unable. And they said, why not? I said, well, don't you see this cell that's 25 miles and on my nose. He said, no, we're not painting anything. Well, duh, it hadn't gone mature yet.
Right, there's no rain in it.
There was no rain, and we kind of got in a little bit of head banging, and it went mature.
Yeah.
Oh, we're painting that. Resume your course.
Yeah, so I guess that, to answer
but
your
this
question,
is why I want a storm scope with me when I'm flying in this kind of weather.
Right. Or the ability to overlay it like some of the newer systems you know.
Right.
But to go back to your question, I think there's a certain uneasiness on both sides because until you know, and I think, you know, JP, you know both sides of it, that we're looking at two different pictures. And you have to look at how we're blending those together to get the total picture.
JP.
Yeah, and to follow up on this, what I think in pilot communities, I think automatically there are a lot of pilots that will see red and yellow and think, that's a thunderstorm, that's severe weather. That's not necessarily the case. What a radar is detecting is a return. The rain is the target, and it's bouncing the energy back to the radar dish. So what could be, it could be hail, it could be heavy rain, it may not be severe weather. You don't really know what's going on in there. And something that Doug said, which I think the most important weather tool that we have is the cheapest one. Our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Never discount your eyes. And there are times when I've even canceled my IFR and gone VFR and fly underneath so I can spot rain shafts.
Yeah, and everybody's definitely nodding around the table here. And I think it would make a big difference in this scenario, particularly if you had that visibility and maybe that visibility going out too. John?
Just to wrap up, the one last thing that most controllers will default to is onboard aircraft radar. Live radar, and because that's better radar. It's designed to depict weather. That coupled with what the pilot's seeing out there, I think most controllers would default to that over what they're seeing.
You know, the word that's coming together for me on this whole thing is composite, right? There's like composite radar, there's composite information, there's putting together all these pieces into a big picture. But at the same time, going back to what we said at the start, this is really two scenarios wrapped into one. There's the immediate, like, can I land at the airport, the mission mind of getting in there? And then the, okay, I'm here now. Now what? I have to get back out of here. And we haven't even talked about that gap you're waiting for. Everybody's going to want that gap to get out. And so you might find yourself in a nice little conga line, and by the time they're ready to let you go, it's gone too. So it's kind of in this whole picture, like I said, a forest for the trees. Sometimes staying ahead of the airplane, we can talk about getting too far ahead, but sometimes staying ahead of the airplane is actually the next flight. Oh my gosh, I succeeded. But now, how do I continue to succeed?